Remaker's Mark, Episode 16, The Sting. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Remaker's Mark. Here we are discussing the classic caper movie, The Sting. This is part two of our discussion. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing tonight, and what is your favorite card game?
I am very well. My favorite card game is Old Maid.
Old Maid, ooh, wow.
Classic.
Yeah. I like it. Thank you. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you this fine evening, and what is your favorite card game?
I'm doing very well, and that's a hard decision. I play cards in quite a few different settings. As a team game, I would probably have to say 500, which is kind of euchre-ish. But I am quite the poker player as well, and I do enjoy most versions of poker.
Nice.
I'll say 500.
All right. Good answer. That's a great game. Lee Healing Salve, how are you tonight, and what is your favorite card game?
I'm great, and recently my new favorite card game is Cards Against Humanity.
Ooh, good choice.
Greatest card game ever.
Yes.
And most horrible.
Yeah. A little different than the cards that they played in The Sting. Just a scotch.
Yeah,
but,
just a little
bit. Still, not out of the consideration, absolutely. And Mark Josting, how are you, and what is your favorite card game?
Well, I'm well, thank you. And I want to say Munchkin, but I think the real answer is Mahjong.
Oh, wow. Is Mahjong a card game?
Those are tiles.
They are tiles, but it functions exactly the same as a card game. So they're cards that could really hurt you if you threw them at somebody.
Not unlike a James Bond-esque villain whipping cards at people and cutting off heads.
Yeah. Or Gambit.
Yeah.
Dang it. Good job, Mark.
There you go. Nice. Mark's quick on the turnaround. Nice. My name is Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host here tonight. And I don't know how I cannot pick Cribbage for this. Cribbage is just the greatest card game of them all. I love 500. I love poker. But man, there's nothing like a good game of Cribbage. It made me so happy to see them playing Cribbage in The Sting, too, by the way. It was just like when they were hanging out trying to unwind, they played Cribbage. And that made me super
What a great happy. Little scene that was, too.
Yep. Indeed. All right. So again, this is part two of our discussion of The Sting. Before we move on to our discussion of part one and the feedback that we got, as well as moving on to our plot and filmmaking changes, I want to thank our friends at Modern Antics for their promotional consideration.
Modern Antics produces and markets hugely interesting events in bars and other cool places. Upcoming events include The Grow Out Blowout, a benefit concert for the Beard Race at the Triple Rock Social Club on Friday, January 17th. Buzzed Words, about dirty jokes and dolphins, on Saturday, February 8th at the Chow Girls Parlor. Interested in other Modern Antics events? Check them out at modernantics.com.
All right. Thanks again to Modern Antics. Now we want to touch on some feedback that we got from the first part of our discussion where we recast the movie The Sting. We put a call out to Facebook and Twitter and got lots of great responses. On Facebook, we didn't specifically say, but I think we mostly leaned towards the Robert Redford and Paul Newman characters, but people filled in other ones as well. On Facebook, Marley Renee West said Leonardo DiCaprio could be Johnny Hooker, Shia LaBeouf as Henry, and Ray Liotta as Doyle. And I actually consider Ray Liotta. I like that. I think that's a good pick. You're taking away from the Irishness a bit, but yeah.
That's the best of the three.
Yes, agreed. Shia LaBeouf one. I don't know. That's a little rough. I'm not going to make fun of our listeners, but you might want to reconsider that one, Marley. I'm just going to toss that out there. Just try again. See how it goes. Try again. Adam Brisk on Facebook asked if we could get Skrillex to remix the soundtrack, which terrifies me and intrigues me in equal amounts.
Me too. Exact same. I was driving in the car, imagining it going,
Yep. Jess Angus McCullough suggested James Franco and Seth Rogen in the two main roles. I don't know which was which, but win-win there, sort of. Allison Clauder, who has given feedback many times before and was part of the Nerd Night Minnesota podcast here on Math is Hard, suggested Idris Elba as Henry. Again, we've touched on that. Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Johnny, which I think is great.
I do like that.
And Tommy Lee Jones for Doyle Lonigan, which I think is great. Again, not the the Irish side of things, but definitely the menacing side of things.
Word, Allison Clauder.
He played an Irish guy in Blown Away.
Yep. What did you say, Mark? Sorry?
I said word, Allison Clotter.
Indeed, word, Allison Clotter. Lisa Lerke, who's provided feedback before as well, said, I really like Bradley Cooper for Hooker because I think he can do charismatic backstabber well. That's one for the resume. And then Martin Kretzman took things perhaps a little too literally, although I like where he went. He said, I would recast Gordon Sumner as The Sting. So I can't fault him for it.
Martin doesn't get
that Sting, but The Sting.
The Sting, exactly. Close enough. And then on Twitter, Derek Shill, I don't know how to respond to that. Apologize, Derek, who is at The Windy Apple, which is a great username, suggested Joseph Gordon-Levitt for the Redford character, Leonardo DiCaprio for the Newman character. He said that's a first thought. He said it's easily in one of his top 10 favorite movies, so I could tell he put a lot of effort into it. He said the real trick, I think, would be getting a good Lonigan, Yafala, which was his actual wording there. And so I followed up and said, well, who would you recast as Lonigan? He said, I've been thinking about it all day. I'd like to stay Irish and then comma Liam Neeson question mark. So woo-hoo! He definitely agreed with many of us. And then my cousin and consultant here on Math is Hard, Steve Grotham, who is at Gleeb, G-L-E-E-B, said, just don't touch Marvin Hamlish.
Damn right.
And I asked him if even if it was someone like Trent Reznor, and I said it in all caps, he's like, you know, I think I'd actually buy a Trent Reznor Marvin Hamlish project. I think that would be pretty intriguing. And I, like, again, can't argue with him there. So thanks again to you all for your feedback here. Again, if you want to find out more information about us, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at username MathIsHardNet. All right, now we want to continue our discussion of the casting side of things and talk about who we chose from the first part of the episode. So in the royal, boy, I did that again. It's like looking at the word red when it's blue colored and saying blue out loud. I can't see the word Doyle in front of me and say the word roll. So I'm going to close my eyes. Oh, no, okay, that doesn't work either. In the role of Doyle Lonigan, originally played by Robert Shaw.
Well, I'm big Alabama to say it.
Yeah, big Alabama possessed me there. Scary. We went with Andy and Lee's choice of Liam Neeson. Woo-hoo! So good call on that, yes. As well as some of our participants in the feedback side of things. In the role of Henry Gondorf, originally played by Paul Newman, we went with Mark's choice of Idris Elba.
Word me.
Word, Mark. And in the role of Johnny Hooker, originally played by Robert Redford, we went with Lee and Mark's choice of Tom Hiddleston. So yes. By virtue of a tie, I think Lee and Mark were the big winners. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. In the minor roles, although Lee didn't pick one of those, so we'll say Lee and Mark, but we went with Mark's choice of Rachel Weisz in the Billy role. So Mark, I guess, Mark and Lee, you tied. Good job. Big surprise. Mark and Lee are the winners.
Skype 5.
Well done. Oh, Skype 5. Nice. Oh, that was awesome. Good work, you guys. Wow. You guys should be Foley artists. Internet Foley artists. That's what the world needs. Yikes. So again, we're democratizing the process here. And even though Mark and or Lee won, I'll be damned if they're going to pick the movie because I'm going to. It's my turn. I've earned it. I've earned it. I've earned it. And so my choice for the next movie, I had two from which to pick and I threw it out to the group here and it was pretty decisive. We pretty much all agreed on this. The next movie that we are going to be discussing is the 1983, comedy classic Travel Experience. Vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm pretty excited about that. I think that's going to be, I think the hardest part about that is discussing what we would change about that movie because it's just so much goodness there. But I think we'll find a way. We'll put on our critical hats. How about
for the podcast, for the vacation, we just put Vacation on and just watch it.
Nice. I thought about doing Remakers Mark commentaries. That's something that, yeah, yep, exactly. Remakers Mark riff tracks. You got it. So we shall see. But yeah, Vacation. I'm very much excited about that. All right. So now moving on to part two of our discussion of The Sting. So we've got lots of things we want to talk about here in terms of the plot, tech, and filmmaking changes or just comments that we have about it. I think we all really like this movie. I think we speak very highly of this film. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of criticism, but just things that we appreciated about it, things we liked, and things that we would maybe want to do different in terms of setting or different casting. Again, we talked about recasting, but lots of opportunities here. The first thing that we're going to talk about is casting combos. Andy, you started off on that, so why don't you talk a little bit about that first?
Sure. In my notes, I put, one of the handsomest leading men combos in film history, I wager. And I stand by that, Mark. There was proven chemistry with Newman and Redford from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. and this movie. And I can't remember who said it. I think it was you, Kyle, that said it in the first episode, that these guys just look like they're having fun out there. So I guess I wanted to just kind of compare them to some other leading men combos that are out there. There's natural comparisons between this movie and Ocean's 11, both original and remake. So the Brad Pitt, George Clooney combo or comparison is an easy one to make. Another one that I threw out there was Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire. Although in hindsight, the only movie I can think of that they did together was Holiday Inn, but still, it's a combo. So there you are. Anyone else have other ideas that came into their head from this?
You know, I think you often see like director and actor combos, and those tend to go for a really long time. But it seems like the actor with other actor combos, you don't see really consistently or you know, across several movies. And maybe that's a good thing, because maybe the shtick would run thin, or maybe it would just not be, it wouldn't have that same weight as it would were it just, you know, one or two versus a dozen of them. Sequels aside, right? I mean, sequels of movies or franchises, if you will, you know. Obviously, like,
yeah, it's
Ian McKellen and Viggo Mortensen have been in all of the Lord of the Rings together, and you know, Ian Holm and Frodo Baggins, whatever the hell his name is, Elijah Wood. There we go. Hi. one that I thought of that it's different in that it's not two guys, but it was Woody Allen and Diane Keaton. I mean, the chemistry that they had and their timing together was just unmatched. I think comedically, I think they were just fantastic together.
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about a leading man and leading lady combo, but I'm sure there's some out there that I just can't think of any right now, that there's that natural chemistry that you just kind of want to see again. You want to see more of what they can do together.
Yeah, they had romantic elements in their movies as well, but it was more that kind of like buddy aspect of it. So there was romance there, yeah. But it was just them just riffing back and forth and mm-hmm. very similar to what a lot of these sort of buddy roles, if you will. It doesn't have to be male-male, female-female, what have you, but yeah.
This is one that just occurred to me. No, how about John Cusack and Joan Cusack?
Oh, nice. I like that. Yep, that's a great one. I would see as many of those as I could. I love that they're always together. Yep.
I would throw out another one. What about Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Martin and Lewis. Yep. Andy, you had one other one, right?
Yeah. It's not a very good one compared to the other ones that you said, but I was thinking Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan have done a few
combos.
Of varying degrees of success. But I think Sleepless in Seattle was obviously a big one. And was it Joe versus the Volcano was an older one with them? Am I thinking of that correctly? And then also You Got Mail, which is essentially Sleepless in Seattle too. But they had some chemistry.
Totally.
Yeah.
Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine were the romantic leads in two Billy Wilder movies, and they're both excellent.
Nice.
Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly not the handsomest combo, but...
Yeah, we've sort of branched out from... handsome combos to just really good combos.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. Natural chemistry.
But I think that the chemistry, though, is, I think, really the important part. And I think Newman and Redford were doubly blessed to have natural chemistry and the handsome factor. But I think that the other couples or pairs that we've mentioned are equally compatible.
What I think, so another thing that sets them apart from some of the other combinations that we've talked about is that they did things that were largely not genre specific, whereas Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan essentially did the same movie over and over again. Although Joe versus the Volcano was much more comedy than Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail and that sort of thing. But the chemistry from Redford and Newman sort of transcended what style the movie was in, and they could sort of fit into whatever those two roles and how those two roles related to each other. The chemistry made up for the gaps.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Another thing that we touched on, and Andy, you touched on this briefly before, was the similarity between The Sting, which came out in 1973, and Ocean's 11, which came out in the 2000s. I don't remember exactly when. But Andy, do you want to talk a little bit about the similarities and differences there and kind of how you see those two together and separate from each other?
Yeah. And I think going even farther back, the original Ocean's 11 came out in 1960, I believe, which was a Rat Pack movie. So I guess
I forgot that was an original.
Yeah.
I forgot it completely.
And I haven't seen the original, so I can't speak to that, but I wonder, you know, which movie influenced which movie. I know that The Sting, I believe Was that a book before it was a movie? Someone fact check me on that. Let's check. Let's go to our research department here. Typey. So I guess I can't say if The Sting existed as a work of art prior to becoming a movie, but I see a lot of similarities in The Sting and the remake of Ocean's 11. And I think it's easy to see a nod maybe to the Rat Pack and just kind of the style of the movie. But the building of the ensemble, like the building of the team, the two leading men, one of whom I kind of got the impression that one of them maybe was the senior partner kind of in that pair, between like George Clooney and Brad Pitt. But yeah, they were they're pretty much on equal footing. But I guess, they're both, you know, kind of complex heist movies. A lot of things have to go right for the heist to be pulled off, but you don't think of those things in the moment while you're watching the movie. You're just like, oh, wow, that's so cool that they thought of that. And, oh, that's such a cool little thing that they did. And this is so witty and clever. And in hindsight, you look back and be like, wow, there's a million things that had to happen just so for this thing to come off. And in reality, it would have been incredibly improbable. But, you know, while you're watching in the theater, you just probably got a big grin on your face because it's so cool to watch. So,
yeah,
I would like to believe that Soderbergh took a lot of cues from The Sting, but, you know, maybe he didn't. Maybe they're just two very closely paralleled stories.
Yeah, I feel like Ocean's 11 is the culmination of the scene in The Sting where it's like the sleight of hand card work. It's like if a director could do that for an entire movie, that's what Ocean's 11 is. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that in a damning way. I'm saying that in a just totally realistic way. That's the mood that they wanted. They wanted that fun, sexy, interesting, bright, shiny Vegas light version of that. You know what I mean? They're two very different worlds. But I do think that it definitely owes a great deal of influence to The Sting. You know, I think The Sting has lightness to it, but I think it's a dramatic movie.
Yeah.
You know, Ocean's 11 has drama to it, but I would call it an entertainment movie more than a drama, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And I like them both for their own purposes. You know, I think they're both equally successful for what they wanted to do. You know, The Sting has its moments of being lighter and of being darker, but overall, it's very... And Jer, if you want to add a little bit about this, you've commented when we watched it and when we talked in pre-production about how even keel it is in a very complimentary way. You know, how it really is just a classic movie in a lot of ways and just such a well-made movie that it maintains that sense of drama, it maintains a sense of interest, and the con and the sting is all part of it, but it just maintains such a great mood throughout. And Ocean's 11 does the same thing. It's just a different mood, and that's okay.
I think that's a really good way to put that both movies decided what they wanted to be and how they wanted to feel, and they stuck to it and succeeded in that. I think The Sting is a much classier feeling movie. If I could come up with a adjective to describe it, I would say classy for The Sting. It's a well-made movie. It's a well-acted movie. It's a well-filmed movie. And just the characters themselves, they're all just very classy. Even Robert Shaw as the villain is a classy villain. He's not a scuzzy, scummy type of villain that's you know, hunched down and ugly and anything else. Everything's just very classy. And I think in the same way, the Ocean's 11, to me, Ocean's 11, the new one and the Brat Pack version too, I think they're both a bunch of rich, good-looking people that decided they'd get together and make a movie and have fun making a movie. And that's how it feels to me. And it's a well-made movie and it's a clever plot, but it's always just the best looking people and they're goofing around having a fun time making this movie. And it's all very, very much a sly wink to each other, essentially. It's almost like a big inside joke and we get to watch it between Brad Pitt and George Clooney and Soderbergh and all, you know, all these people that just are all chummy and we just get to reap the benefits of that. And I would throw out a couple other movies in that same general genre of caper movies and sort of ensemble cast building that team. And I love that style of movie. And I thought both the original and even more so the remake of The Italian Job does the same thing in a different way, but equally successfully. I thought Sneakers was another.
That's a great
ensemble caper cast. And I love that movie. And I love I love movies where you bring in all these people with different specific sets of skills.
Liam Neesons!
Bring in all these Liam Neesons and, you know, put together, and everybody has to do their part exactly right for it to function right. And even Kelly's Heroes, it was another one that I think that we should do a podcast about at some point in the future is a great, not quite the same, but similar style where it's an ensemble cast and it's a group of people all brought together to achieve this one particular thing. That one being a little different because they already all know each other. But yeah, I think it's a great style of movie. I don't think that either The Sting nor Ocean's 11 created the genre. I'm sure they borrowed from each other as well as many other sources, but they both did what they did well. And I love them both equally and in different ways.
I would wager to say that The Sting and Ocean's 11 are the epitomes of the genre.
Agreed.
Where the other ones are contenders.
I'll agree with that.
I would probably put The Grifters in there as well in terms of a more hard-boiled version of that, in terms of the con game. But yeah, it's a different echelon.
I'm going to put this out there and see what you guys think. That's, I haven't seen The Grifters, but The Sting, Ocean's 11 are unique from other crime movies, heist movies, caper movies, whatever, in that the plan, the con is really the big thing. You know, so many movies out there, there's a group of people trying to do a thing and they have a plan, but then the plan fails.
Right.
And what you're really concerned about is, are the people going to be okay?
And get the thing.
Well, sure. But, you know, there's a lot of improvisation going on. There's, and that sort of deal. And
kind of like at the bridge in the River Kwai. There's a plan to do a thing, goes wrong.
Sure. Sure.
I'm just trying to be.
You should write for IMDb, Andy.
But shut up, my hypothesis, what I posit here is that in these two films, in The Sting and Ocean's 11, you know, the success of the con is really the issue. Like, we're in other crime movies, we're totally fine when something goes wrong, or somebody doesn't pull off their part of the plan. The cops finally catch up with somebody, that sort of thing. Like, that's totally okay if everybody ends up alive, I guess. But, the success of the con is what we care about, quite a bit more in these two films.
I agree. Well, some other examples like Reservoir Dogs, it starts out as the bank job or whatever they're doing, but it becomes more about the cop trying to maintain his cover. And Dog Day Afternoon, it's about, initially it's a bank robbery, but it becomes more about this pathetic guy just trying to get his 15 minutes of fame. But, I agree with you, the Sting and Ocean's 11, the center of the plot is the heist. So, yeah, I know what you're getting at, Mark.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that in a lot of other caper movies and a lot of crime movies, it's about the crime itself, or it's about attaining the MacGuffin. And in both The Sting and Ocean's 11, it's about the plan going according to plan, and not we're just going to make a plan, and if we have to abandon it to get what we need to get, then we'll do that. I think The Sting wouldn't have worked if The Sting failed, but they still swindled Shaw. It just wouldn't have made sense as a movie. The whole movie was it's even called The Sting. The whole movie was, even with the little placards between the different pieces of the movie, it was setting up the sting, it was performing it, it was succeeding in it. I mean, that we didn't watch the movie to see Robert Shaw get his comeuppance. We watched it to see this plan unfold to perfection.
Yeah. And I think it just, I agree. I think it would have been a different and probably disappointing movie if, the con had unraveled and it ended up with like a foot chase down an alley and Shaw gets shot by Johnny Hooker. I think that would have been disappointing.
I agree. Yeah.
Even though the ending of The Sting did feel a little stunted in his exit, but I know that's kind of the point. It didn't, it was a different resolution that I think I would have loved, but I liked it overall. It didn't do a disservice to the movie, but it just felt like, I don't know, it just all happened really quickly. And I know that's kind of the point, but just his exit was just kind of strange, So I don't know. I don't know that it could have been done better or differently, but it just felt a little bit weird to me.
That scene to me felt weird from an editing perspective. And I think this speaks to the era in which the film was made versus like going back to the modern ones of like the New Italian Job or Ocean's 11, where that scene seemed like it was edited with too long of a shot or a series of long shots that were too long. So you saw too much of the action. And I'll compare it. Maybe it'll make more sense if I compare it. Like today it would have been much quicker cuts, faster editing. You'd be kind of catching glimpses as the camera goes this way and that way and up and down and whatever. And all that you'd end up seeing is kind of the aftermath. So you'd kind of hear a scuffle. You'd probably see a couple people pull guns. You'd hear some gunshots, and then the camera would kind of slow down, and all you'd see are two dead bodies on the floor and everyone kind of looking around. Whereas in this movie, it was like you saw Paul Newman pull out his gun and he, you know, does a shot, and then the cop does a shot, and it's just was clunky. Despite it, and all of and I agree with you, Kyle, that it was also over very quickly, and you're suddenly like, oh, wait, what? That's it? That scene was probably the clunkiest of the entire movie, but I think that that was a child of the editing techniques at the time. And I think that if they had the ability to do it differently, they probably would.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. All right. Well, one thing that, Jer, you commented on a lot was kind of the nature of the con, which you talked a bit about, but also gambling and kind of the nature of gambling in The Sting, and specifically the type of poker that they played. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I guess there's two things that I have. The first would be a question to pose to us as we are talking about a remake filmed now, which I assume would be still set in the 30s, although that's certainly a topic for conversation if we want to have it. But if we were to set it in a 30s movie or a 30s time frame, one of the things that I thought about after watching this the most recently is the con itself, the what they decide is going to be the hook, what they're going to do is horse racing. And I would assume that horse racing was much more popular then than it is now. And horse racing certainly still exists around, and is very popular in certain parts of the country, but it's not the gambler's paradise, I think, that it used to be, in most of this country. So, I guess the question I would throw out is, would a caper movie centered around horse racing be as viable a gimmick as it was in 1970, or would it get lost on an audience these days? So I guess that's my first question that I would throw out. Well, I'll ask that first. I'll come back to poker.
I think that's it wouldn't mean the same thing now as it did in the 30s, but there's probably some place in the world where betting on horses is still as much of a high roller thing.
And I think that it would be cool to make a little bit more focus of the time period being one where there were these underground, essentially illegal gambling holes that were popping up all over, especially places like New York and Chicago. It would be neat to kind of dig into that a little bit farther, and look at some of the more real history around those and kind of get an idea of just how those operated and what they were.
I think if you look at like so when the new Bond reboot happened with Daniel Craig, the first one was Casino Royale, and the setting of the poker game felt anachronistic in a way that honored James Bond's lineage and was interesting. Like it was not this fast paced, like the camera did not like sweep across the table when they were dealing cards. You know, I mean, it was very stationary. I think if it were done remade today, I think you could still have that, like, owing to the honor and the origin of that style of gambling, but people would see like the class of it and would see the people that were there. So it'd be like everything around the gambling. I think the actual act of gambling, which there's a big, you know, it's like how much of the original Sting is around like getting bets in and placing bets and walking up to the bookie counter and all that. Like there's a lot of time of him walking up and making bets. So I think it would be less of that, but more just the environment around it and the culture around it and the like affluence around it. You get a little bit of that in The Sting, but I think were you to redo it today, regardless of the time in which it was made, I think that you could kind of tie into that a little bit more to get the vibe of things. So you get kind of people that are, you know, you could get those people that almost like live there, you know, that are there all the time, that's all they do, whether they're a gambling addict or they just happen to be really good at it, or maybe both. I don't know. But, you know, you get just more of the things around the gambling and less of the direct gambling itself.
Well, I think that when you kind of take the different components of gambling or the different variations of gambling from a strictly cursory sense, horse racing is a more high class on the scale for gambling. It's not jacks in the alley or anything like that. It's you picture, when you picture horse racing and gambling on horse races, you picture well-to-do people that are either, you know, owning or in some way involved in the horse racing industry, or know a lot about it. And I think that kind of came across a little bit in the sting, when you had the one shill that was there pretending he was a British man, and you know, he was very highbrow, and like you said, Kyle, there was a lot of different sorts of people there, and they were being waited on by people in tuxedos, and so there was definitely a high class vibe to it, even though it was this hidden underground club in the back alley behind a drugstore.
Yeah, I agree that the I guess the premise of the gambling, the actual game that's involved in a remake, should be something that has a little bit of class to it. Just, you know, why I think the recent Ocean's 11 remake was set in Vegas is because it could be glamorous. It have a little bit of glitz to it. But I have to wonder if horse racing isn't relevant nowadays, like maybe another sport would be. And, you know, my gut tells me that boxing would be the right one.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can still, I mean, there is still plenty of underground betting going on in professional boxing. And, well, hey, I mean, there's even underground boxing rings too, all over the place.
It certainly could add a darker element to the film.
Yeah.
For some unlicensed boxing matches.
And if our villain is a crime lord, then that might make perfect sense for him to be involved in that.
Well, and the boxing was on the peripheral of Ocean's 11. It was the reason why they were choosing that particular weekend to pull the crime, because it was a fight night, and so there was extra money and extra people and whatnot. So it did take place sort of in a boxing setting, even though boxing happened for about 10 minutes in the whole movie.
Yeah. Yep.
The other point that I was going to make as far as the gambling was concerned is that I really appreciate, and I would definitely want to shy away from this in a remake, the fact that the poker scene between Lonnegan and Gondorf and you know, the other rich snooty guys, was five card stud. I mean, such a classic game. I don't know if it was a popular game in the 30s, if that was anachronistic or if that was true to form. But my fear would be if some director just got a handle on this, similar to Casino Royale, if they decided, hey, let's remake The Sting, immediately that game would change to Texas Hold'em, because that's the game everyone now knows. And as much as I enjoy playing Texas Hold'em, I think that it's completely overdone in movies. Anytime you have to have some sort of gambling or poker or cards, it's been Texas Hold'em for like the last 5 to 8 years since poker got super popular with everybody. And so yeah. I love that they play, like, just like Kyle said with cribbage, I love that they play five card stud, or five card draw rather. And it's just even though they didn't play it correctly, but that's a different, that's a different conversation. But, I would be sad if we or someone remade this movie and took that out and changed it to a more contemporary, poker game.
Yep. Right on. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to touch on filmmaking stuff a little bit here. Andy, you brought up some good points, and we've talked a little bit about it in regards to The Sting versus Ocean's 11. But one of the things that I think we're discovering in this podcast is just seeing lots of different eras of film, you know, from Bridge on the River Kwai to The Sting to The Usual Suspects and everywhere in between, of all the different types of filmmaking there has been, and sort of the transition from old styles of filmmaking into new styles of filmmaking, and just the big discrepancy between those two. Andy, do you want to talk a little bit about that, between kind of how The Sting felt versus modern day movies? And to me, it was kind of the transition, and I'll touch into that, but why don't you start out with that?
We talked a little bit about the climactic scene and what we described as the clunky editing. I will say a little bit of trivia that I found from our main trivia research source, imdb.com, that the scene where Paul Newman's character is doing the cool little card deck shuffling trick is actually someone else's hands, which shouldn't be a surprise. But I think from a purely filmmaking standpoint, the editing that they did to cut from when his hands disappear and Paul Newman's hands actually reappear and then pan up to his face was very well done, because if you're just watching it casually, it looks like there's no cut at all, and it just seems like one continuous shot. which was...
Yeah, it's pretty well perfect. Yeah. Yep, agreed.
Kudos to that. Yeah, there's a couple, I think, in this movie, a couple maybe like quick zooms in and out that happened on a couple of scenes. I'm thinking maybe of one of the scenes where the police lieutenant is chasing Hooker across, through Chicago, up the elevated tracks and down and things like that. And also I think the scene where the assassin, that lady that was in the diner, forgetting her name.
Loretta.
Where Loretta and Hooker look like they're meeting in the alley, and then turns out they discover that she's an assassin. Spoiler. But there's a couple, I think, long, quick zoom transitions in those scenes that were, I think, pretty... You feel like that may be a transitional element in the filmmaking from some of the more stoic movies that we've looked at, like, for example, My Fair Lady, to some of the more adventurous and maybe what we call modern camera techniques in a lot of the other movies that we've seen. So I don't know if I actually made a point in all that I just said, but there you go.
There were a few moments, and when Kyle and Lee and I watched this earlier this week, we kind of pointed out a couple of them that each of us saw, but there was a couple moments that felt in style, in filmmaking style, very Hitchcockian. There was a couple of shots that felt very much Coppola-esque.
Yeah.
And so I think that this is in that great period of time in the 70s where filmmaking was starting to become more of an art form and cinematography was really coming into its own. And you could start to kind of see glimpses of that in The Sting. In small pieces, small chunks, there was just great blocking, great angles, and the way that things were filmed, just you could start to see that art form start to develop.
Yeah, it was a much more active camera than I think like even the 60s had, so you could feel that 70s influence. I think the hard part was that there's a little bit of a discrepancy between the vibe of the 30s and some of that active camera movement that the 70s was sort of growing into a little bit. So I think that's kind of maybe how it felt a little out of place. And you know, now every movie in the 70s and 60s feels weird in general, just because it's, you know, we're used to a much different cadence, a much different pace. But, you know, just some of those shots at the beginning where it like focuses on the guy's feet as he's walking into the place where they're counting the money and taking the payments and things like that. Like there was no reason to do that, but that was just a very 70s thing to do, is just like, you know, focus on something and try to do something just for the sake of doing it. And so, you know, in the 30s way that felt weird, but in the modern filmmaking at that time, it felt like, all right, well, this is kind of where we're going with it. But yeah. All right, cool. Up next is just a quick comment that I had made, which is I wish there was a greater female presence in this movie. There was, and I don't recall who, when we first kind of talked about The Sting, but somebody threw out the idea of doing, was it Josh Freeman maybe, Andy? Was it you that was having the conversation with Josh on Twitter? Our good friend Josh Freeman. Yes. I think so. Pulling a Freeman, I think was coined because of this, talking about like completely switching the cast around and maybe having like Helen Mirren in the Gondorf role, you know, kind of a elder states woman in this case, not an elder statesman, but someone who has that same kind of power, that same kind of influence, and that same kind of presence, but in the role that was traditionally done by a male or done by Paul Newman in that original. I thought that would be really interesting, but there's just not a lot of women in this movie. You know, no. I mean, they're cigarette women in the bookie area. They're, you know, there's the assassin, and that's an interesting character. And I thought that was, you know, they gave her some empowerment that way. But yeah, I just really wish there was more to that. And maybe if it was from a book, maybe that was just part of that. But I wish in the remake, and I, of course, now having recast it, we didn't pick any of them. So now I'm kicking myself for not doing that. But again, I wish that was just a little bit more. If I were to modernize it, that would be one way that I think you could do so in a way that would be really beneficial to everything.
We would totally do a code switch and just have all the genders switched. So you have an entirely female grifting crew.
Yeah. Yep. That would be really cool. I would like that. That would be a good sort of experiment or adventure.
I see Meryl Streep in there somehow.
Interesting. I could see her being the assassin.
And then one lone dude running a brothel.
Yeah. Yep.
That'd be Mads Mikkelsen.
There you go. Shaking his booty.
Running a Ferris wheel.
Yeah.
Brothel.
Nice. Flipping it for real. All right. And then one thing we just, touched on some movies.
Sorry.
Magic Mads. That's all right. He's a Magic Mads. Anytime I can throw a heart in there, I'm going to do so. So we've touched on some movies that are very similar, from Ocean's 11 and its sequels to some other things. But there's some other movies that I really think are a good sort of points of comparison to this movie. So we're going to do a brief been there, done that. I mentioned The Killing, which has a big part focusing around a track, a horse race. They you don't quite know it. If you haven't seen The Killing, stop this recording right now. I give you permission and go see it. So I'll give you 2 seconds. Ready? One, two. Okay. Now that you've seen it, you won't be mad at me for spoiling this, but there's an assassination at a track, and everybody thinks they're like going to kill somebody, but they don't. They shoot a horse. They kill a horse, thereby causing chaos at the track, and ended up stealing all this money. So it's kind of this whole big plan. So it's kind of in tune with The Sting that way, but it's much more of that film noir, hard-boiled kind of detective-y movie. It's got Sterling Hayden, who was in Dr. Strangelove, and he's just fantastic. So yeah, I would highly recommend that. The other one, again, we touched on briefly, is The Grifters with Annette Bening and John Cusack. Another really much darker movie. And that was the first movie that I remember the ending making me go, what just happened? It's like, it's not a total Kaiser Soze twist ending, but the ending sneaks up on you and it's like, whoa, wait, what, huh? So if you haven't seen it, definitely see both of those.
I just watched The Grifters recently, and yeah, I know what you mean. It's a good movie. I like it.
Yep. And Angelica Houston as well is very good in that. Another one someone threw out was The Usual Suspects, which again is a more modern take on that and definitely a different vibe. But you've got everybody kind of coming together for the common goal of, you know, stealing money. And it's not a con per se, but they're just trying to make their way. It sounds like such a, oh, those poor guys trying to make their way. It's not exactly what I had in mind. Someone referenced The Lady Killers. Who is that? Was that Mark? Did you?
I think
that?
I did toss it on there. And it's kind of that one, at least the recent one. That is a remake, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Tom Hanks one, yeah, that's a remake.
Yeah. And
not a good one.
That one kind of reverses the situation that it is an ensemble cast, and all the criminals are trying to pull off this this bank robbery or casino robbery. Casino robbery.
Yeah.
In the end, they can't do it, but it's a similar sort of approach, at least in an ensemble crime film. And I think that I'm a little bit more intrigued by the parallel of the recent Magician heist movie, and Now You See Me.
Oh yeah,
where the
I just watched that.
Yeah, it's a pretty good film.
I didn't care for the ending, but.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But it's a same sort of deal. It's an ensemble sort of film, and the this group of criminals, they all kind of have their different specific set of skills. And I like that in that one, because they're magicians, you know, they never tell you the secrets. They never tell you how it's done. But the authorities never foil the plot.
Got it.
What's the movie that came out a few years ago about these Harvard students that learned how to count cards?
21.
Yeah.
Which is based on a book, which is based on the actual story of those people.
And the book, I've heard, was quite good, but the movie didn't do very well.
The movie over-glamorized it, as movies do, and turned it into, you know, a them against their teacher, against the law sort of thing that really wasn't the case. But it is a very fascinating story.
Yep. I think it's a good analysis of that.
I would say two other movies that I would throw out in similar but different ways. One would be most of what Guy Ritchie has done.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like the Lock, definitely Stock, different
and,
vibe.
Lock, Stock, but... and Two Smoking Barrels or Snatch. A lot of that. It's similar. There's generally always sort of some sort of MacGuffin that people are after. And what's different about his is that oftentimes it's very much different people that aren't all working together, but it's, you know, weaving different stories in that are all after the same thing.
And those are excellent films.
They are. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all very much similar films, but they're done very. He knows his style and he does it well.
Yeah, I think they're stylistically very, very cool, very similar. Although there's a big difference in those films, nothing ever goes according to plan.
Yeah, it's kind of the anti The Sting. The other one, which I'm surprised that none of us have mentioned yet, is The Great Muppet Caper, which might be the best caper movie of all time.
Only film that we've referenced tonight that actually has the word caper in the title.
It's true.
Such a good movie.
I'm ashamed on our whole behalf. Oof. Well, thank you, Jer, for appropriately shaming us.
And now I want to go watch The Great Muppet Caper, seriously. We should wrap this up.
I'm coming over.
I'm coming over, too.
we'll wait a half an hour, Andy, then and we'll just...
It's got Charles Grodin. Come on.
We'll beam it to your van DVD player. All right. Well, on that note, that wraps up the second half of our discussion here of The Sting. So if you want to find out more information about this podcast or others on the Math is Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net. You can find show notes there as well, so you can find out movies and actresses and actors who we discussed here and other links as well. If you want to find us on Twitter or Facebook, you can do so at username MathIsHardNet. Our next episode will be released on January 27th, where we will be discussing National Lampoon's Vacation, which I'm really excited and a little bit terrified about. That's going to be a hard one to recast, man. How do you feel Chevy Chase again? Yeah, so that'll be a good time. So, gentlemen, thank you again for being here and for taking part in this with me. I enjoy it greatly, and as always, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.